Welcome to the SureCast, a podcast produced by Bernstein Sure, covering a variety of law, public affairs, and community-related issues of interest. The opinions expressed are not necessarily those of the firm, and no advice in this podcast should be considered legal advice. If you are in need of legal counseling, please call Bernstein Sure at 207-774-1200. Thank you, and on with the show.
And joining us here in the studio is Kate Knox. She's a shareholder. She's also a board of director member, campaign finance guru, lobbying law legend, and social justice advocate. And that is a large moniker, Kate.
That is, when you say it like that,
really
it's
is.
Pretty cool.
Yeah. You've done a lot here. Your background is actually very fascinating to me. You've been here at Bernstein Sure for 16 years, and
yeah.
You were at the University of Maine Law as kind of a non-traditional
That's right, an alternative older student.
Yeah, that was in 2004 you graduated. You started here in 2003 as a summer
associate.
Yeah,
I did. I've only been at Bernstein Sure as a lawyer, which I think in this day and age is unusual.
And usually it's people who kind of work their way up or decide.
I think you see, and maybe that's changing a little bit more now, but I think you see people moving from law firm to law firm or area to area, sort of geographic area to geographic area. I think the more common story at Bernstein is people are here a very long time. So my story here is not uncommon, but I think in other places it is.
I think we'll just spend a little time on this, but I think it's really important to share with listeners your background, because, you know, I think it must really serve you well in the work that you do and just in life in general. Let's kind of talk about
sure.
that and what led you to go into what you did for that time.
So that my two careers are seemingly unrelated, but they've actually had a really magical connection for me. So when I was first out of college, I went right to graduate school for social work. So I have my master's degree in social work. I have advanced training in family therapy. And for about 10 years after I got out of school, I was a family therapist here in Portland. Loved that job, loved my clients, was really, really enjoyed that portion of my life, and then for a myriad of different reasons decided to go to law school. And many people in law school, because I was a little bit older, I had been in the workforce, sort of assumed I would do family law or something related to social work. Otherwise, why would you have gone to social work school and then law school? But for me, the training I had in sort of understanding group dynamics and people has been incredibly valuable as an attorney. And it's, I think, one of the skills that has helped me the most being a lawyer is my former therapy skills.
But you really belong doing what you're doing now. Your personality is so big. And you have really.
I've been told that before.
It's true. You walk into a room and you just suck the air out of it. I mean, you're really in a good way.
In a good way, though, Tori.
Absolutely.
In a good way.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I guess I wonder, you know, I look at what you do, and we'll kind of get into that, but I'm very fascinated by this. A lot of your time is spent at the state capital of Maine in Augusta,
yeah.
And you know those halls and byways and everything by heart at this point. I'd love to, as a lobbyist, take us through what a day is like for you up in Augusta. A busy day.
Oh, that's an interesting question. Let me back up for a second. If you're thinking about what it's like to be a lobbyist, and I think there's a lot of misconceptions about what lobbyists do and what kind of people they are. I think generally you'll find in the lobbyist community in Maine, it's a very collegial group. It's a relatively small group. Most of the people are quite friendly and quite social. I think the overwhelming characteristic of a lobbyist is somebody who can multitask a lot. Who thinks quickly, who doesn't mind working on a million different kinds of things at once, who likes people, because almost all of lobbying is personal relationships, and who enjoys somewhat of controlled chaos, sometimes uncontrolled chaos. But that's the that's sort of the operative principle in the state houses. It's generally pretty chaotic, and there's a lot going on. So if you think about a typical day there, there is no typical day, except that you will show up at the state house in the morning and that you will leave in sometime at night. You hope it's not the next day. Generally, you can get out of there without that happening. And usually, for me, I go in with a list of things I need to get done, and it's usually quite long of a list. It usually has to do with asking legislators particular questions, trying to get updates, talking to them about upcoming votes. And I would say within 20 to 30 minutes, that list is usually pretty substantially different. So somebody has given you a piece of information that means you need to retool whatever your strategy was when you walked in at 8 o'clock, and you need to very quickly kind of pivot. Okay, I was going to talk to those four people about this issue, but it sounds like that issue's dead. So I need to go talk to these other six people about this new proposal that's coming up. So people who do well, I think, lobbying, are people who like that very stimulating environment where there's a lot changing very quickly, and kind of enjoy the challenge of problem solving really fast, because everything in Augusta happens quickly, and you are always on the hunt for the latest information, the latest amendment to something, the latest thinking about something, and it changes, you know, hour to hour. Sometimes towards the end of the session, literally every 15 minutes, you will get a different version of a plan of what is going to happen in the next 15 minutes. So you have to enjoy that and find it entertaining and a little bit of, I do love puzzles generally, but it's kind of a puzzle. You mm-hmm. have to try to, you have to enjoy the process of figuring out, okay, well, where does this piece fit in the overall picture? And what do I need to do to make it fit?
I would suppose along with that, and having to be nimble and flexible and you know, your kind of twists and turns and plots and all of that, that if you're not on top of things, you could miss a vote.
You could, yeah. Careful. It's the worst lobbyist nightmare, is sort of like, so as an adult, hopefully all of us have had anxiety dreams, right, as kids. My anxiety dreams now as an adult is that I've missed something and I wake up in a cold sweat and think, oh, I did go to the hearing, or I missed that the vote was going to change, or I wasn't in the room. That is not uncommon, and we spend a lot of our time racing around to try to make sure that that doesn't happen, but it does. It's just inevitable with that many committees and that many issues and that the amount of clients that we have. You know, we spend a lot of time trying to stay really meticulously organized underneath all that chaos, so we make sure that we have everybody covered.
There was an ad back in, I think, the 80s and 90s, which was, never let them see you sweat.
Right. That was a great ad. That's exactly right. Mm. So I would say that's a really good observation. So within the chaos, I think one of the keys to be really effective for the people who have hired you is you have to have the ability within that chaos to stay exquisitely calm. So you can't get thrown off by all the jigs and the jags, by the plans changing. You have to have the ability to kind of stay focused through that. There's a common expression over at the State House, it's like a whitewater rafting trip. So, you know, as you're going over the falls, you have to understand what's happening, and you have to stay calm and not panic, which I'm pretty good at most of the time.
And you also, in a raft, you also have to understand the important role of collaboration and in following what the lead guide says has to happen. So I would imagine that, you know, that's a big part of what you're doing, which is the collaborative part. I mean, you're picking all these pieces, you know, you're putting them together, you're hopefully, you know, able to present them, and hopefully a vote is taken and it's not tabled. So you can actually see it through. Your expertise has earned you, you know, not just respect, but I mean, you are, and I don't know the title, so maybe you can explain this to me, but you're the lead lobbyist for the Democratic Party.
Right. So I'm the general counsel for the Democratic Party, and I've done that for many, many years, which has been a really exciting part of my practice, which is sort of campaign finance and certainly help them with issues in Augusta when they need it, but it allows me to really have a lot of contact with the people who are running and getting ready to run in Augusta, and helps with this sort of general pushing through of Democratic principles. We talked about the social justice kind of part of my personality, and for me, that really fits there because it allows me to help people who I think are going to move those issues forward.
You've been at the table, as it were, through many changes in the administration. So
yes,
you've seen a coterie of different governors coming and going, and with that, you have the majority is different, the minority, and so
yes.
I guess I'm wondering, you know, that must take great acumen, you know, I think about kind of human acumen, to be able to pivot to, you know, kind of
to
answer
acclimate.
Those,
mm-hmm.
yeah, to those mm-hmm. changes, because that you have seen some pretty major changes in philosophies and action. How do you do that? Does that make it even more fun for you?
It does. It's part of the overall dynamic of trying to figure out how to get something done within all kinds of different scenarios. And they're very different. I mean, I certainly now, as a Democrat, the Democrats are in charge across the board. And that's a very different sort of game setting than it was when, for example, the Republicans were in charge of everything. I'm lucky in that I have a very bipartisan team, but my even though I'm a Democrat, my philosophy has always been that this work is about people and policy. And so no matter who is in charge, you have to figure out a way to work with them and have common ground and have enough of a relationship with them where you can talk about what your clients' policy initiatives are. Each governor in particular and House and Senate makeup have their own very distinct personalities. And so this is where the social work training comes in. You have to very quickly be able to assess what is the personality of this particular group of people. So do they like a lot of direct contact? Are they open to talking to people of another party? You figure that out very quickly. And that makes the job a lot of fun. But you also have to understand the atmosphere under which you're working because you have to be realistic with clients and you have to not oversell yourself, certainly. We all have different power alleys and different strengths and weaknesses and relationships. And over 16 years, if I've learned nothing else, it's that, you know, you will have ebbs and flows of strong relationships and less strong relationships. So you have to just work with that ebb and flow to the best that you can. And in the end, I think you know, if you do it well, you come out doing pretty well over the long term.
I'm wondering, how do you select, how do you kind of bring on a client? I can only imagine that you don't take on every single person who says, hey, we want to hire you. And I guess what goes into that kind of decision making? And is it kind of your personal, is it the firm, is it kind of, tell me, take us
well,
through
that's an
that.
Interesting question. It's probably a combination of both. And I'm lucky enough at this point in my practice, and we're busy enough that my team, I should say, it's not just me. There's a group of amazing people who I work with that we do sort of a personal assessment and say, does this particular client fit with our current client mix? Because obviously we are very protective of the current client mix. We want to make sure that they, in terms of their policy issues, there's a good fit. In terms of personality, there's a good fit. And that we feel like we can do what they're asking us to do, that we're not over-promising again, that we're being realistic about what we can deliver. And then, of course, we work in a law firm. So there is a whole process around conflicts and making sure that the lanes are clear with people. We are very lucky in that we have a series of great, very loyal, long-standing clients. So many of those lanes are already taken, quite frankly. So to your point that we're not able to take everybody who expresses an interest. And although that caused me great stress many years ago, I've now sort of figured out that, that's just part of what we do and protecting our current clients. And not everybody's going to be a good fit. So that's just part of what you learn over time.
The importance of saying no is a really big thing. And it sounds like it's something that you come to really appreciate the longer you're here.
That's right. I mean, it's true in all of life, right? But it is especially true here because there's so much personal contact in the work we do, personal contact with clients. We are so intensely involved in the issues we get involved in. If it's something that people have a really strong philosophical objection to, that can be problematic because it could affect your sort of underlying ability to sort of advocate vociferously for them. We haven't had a lot of that, but we always do that assessment. You know, can we do our best? Will we throw ourselves on a train track for this person? Because once we get in, that is how we operate. You know, we are zealously protective and competitive for the group of clients that we have. And so we're very careful about who we add to that sort of family of clients.
I also see, just from kind of looking at some of the clients that you're working with, that it's the only thing I can think of is like a giant amoeba, because it kind of seeps into other areas, and you rely on other attorneys here at Bernstein Shearer who might touch another piece of what this client base is.
We do. So if you think about, we have many clients who have lots of different kinds of needs, and they may come to us and say, we would like to put forward this piece of legislation on something. And we say, oh, okay, that's great. That makes sense. That feels like something we can tackle. But in the course of that discussion or in the course of a different bill, another substantive piece of law sort of gets identified, whether it's ERISA law or workers' comp or some HR piece. Which is good for us. We don't need to be substantive experts in everything. I can pick up the phone and call someone here and say, hey, there was a discussion today about ERISA, and I am not sure I got all the important pieces. Can you walk me through what you think? So in that way, our clients have the ability to get substantive expertise on, quite frankly, virtually anything, whether it's IP or HR or business corporation formation. And so that allows us to really be pretty comprehensive in the things that we can delve into. We are not, and some people make the choice to be substantive experts in one thing like healthcare, and that's all they do. And so they know everything about healthcare, and that's certainly one model. I like your description of an amoeba because that's very true. You know, it sort of moves like a living organism, and we pull people in as we need to as we're moving through our work in Augusta.
It seems like that's kind of a differentiator. I guess when I think about Bernstein Shearer compared to maybe other law firms, and you could have gone anywhere. I mean, here you were, this amazing. You're so bright. You're so affable.
Thank you, Tori.
You are. I mean, you're so just lovely to be around. And I imagine you could have had a choice. And so I guess I'm wondering, why Bernstein Scherer, and now, you know, kind of taking the long view 16 years later, was it the right choice? And, you know, what's happening at Bernstein Scherer that just makes you feel really good?
Oh, like a life reflection question.
Mm. And yet you're so young.
Thank you. Yes, I haven't aged at all.
Nope.
So it's a really good question, one I get from some of the students at the law school where I teach a legislative process classes. How do you know where to go? How do you know where the right fit is for you? I don't have a magical answer to that, except that I have always been lucky enough that my gut has been a pretty good guide for me over the years. And my connection with Bernstein Scherer was very much on that level, that when I came here, I had the sense, and that is still true, which is why I'm here, that these were my people, you know, that I had a connection to people, not just around the law or being smart or interesting, but around people, that people were open, they were curious, they were interesting, they were caring. And I would say over the 16 years, I have not been wrong about that. And one of the things I'm most proud about our firm's functioning is that we take care of each other, we look out for each other, and that relationships really are primary here. And I don't think I would have lasted 16 years sort of in a corporate law firm. It's the last place I saw myself practicing, quite frankly. It was in this kind of a model. If those underlying values were not true and that they hadn't held steady. And I think I'm really proud of all the things that have happened over the last 16 years. I think we have worked really hard. I know we've worked hard to attend to our culture here, to make sure that we are putting people first, to think about being cutting edge, not just in the way we provide legal services, which we work very hard at, but also in the way we treat our people. So retention, leave, lateral hires, young families, the kinds of things that we have frequent conversations at the board level about don't have nothing to do with sort of the bottom line and money. It has to do with the culture and how do we keep maintaining the culture that we have and what do we need to do better? And I think firms that aren't willing to think about where they need to step up won't keep up. And we just completed a sort of an internal survey about some of the things we talked to our people and said, what do we need to do better? We got some really direct, good feedback, and we're going to work on those things. And that the attentiveness and the willingness to kind of look and keep working is what keeps me here. It's a great place. I've loved it since I started, and that feeling is still true today.
Do you feel like that feeling kind of permeates out to your client base? You know, what do you hear back from people who either work just directly with you and your group, and then bringing back the amoeba idea,
right?
And with others, what I'm sure you get feedback.
We do. We get. The feedback I'm most proud of is that when people feel like we really work hard and we have their back. And sometimes that work results in passing a bill or defeating a bill that's really important to a client. And that's obviously really important. It's a very tangible kind of deliverable. But the thing I'm most proud of is when we get that feedback, maybe when things didn't go as they want in Augusta, but people say, you know what? I couldn't have asked for a better team. I feel good about everything we did, and it may not have gone our way, but that's politics, right? You can't always predict the future and what's going to happen, but most of our clients, I think, have the same kind of loyalty to us that we feel to them, and that's a really good feeling, that you know that they're very appreciative, they recognize your efforts, they see what you're doing. They notice how hard you're working and how much you care about them. And you can't really ask for more than that.
So I want to get back to your law school teaching. You know, I noticed
it's one of my favorite things.
Yeah, your face just lights up. Yes. So tell me a little bit more about that. And I mean, that is quite possibly the future of Bernstein Shure. I mean, you look at these faces. Tell me what you're seeing.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite things to do in the fall, which is I was lucky enough to get asked with a colleague of mine to teach a sort of a seminar class called Legislative Lawyering. And we have about usually 16 students a semester, and they've all expressed some sort of an interest in legislative law. And it's just a chance to really talk with students about more in depth about the legislative process and what it's like to be a legislative lawyer. I think of it as like my own personal lobbying recruiting tool, because if we can get folks interested in that and sort of add to the depth of the bench of people sort of in Maine who are interested in that topic, I think it's only a great thing. It's wonderful to talk to young lawyers who are still thinking about the law in a very passionate way. Most of them really enjoy being in law school, and they're, you know, they're getting their brains stimulated with all this new information. But at the same time, they're trying to figure out what that means for them. Where do they go? What are they going to do? And so I am so lucky to be able to have conversations with them. To your other question about, well, how do I know what's a good fit? Where do I know what to do? So to just talk to them about what possible career paths they are, how the traditional career path for lawyers, which was that you were a very certain personality, you acted a very specific kind of a way, and then you got a legal job, is really not the reality anymore. So to figure out what your own personal style is, to figure out what kind of work you do want to do, and then to figure out what is a good fit for you culturally, there are a lot of fantastic places in Maine to practice law. So it's a question of what you think is going to be a good fit for you over the long term. And so it connects really nicely with my social work side of my brain, because I love coaching people and sort of helping them think about where they want to go and what they want to do, and quite frankly, what they don't want to do, as our new fledgling lawyers are getting launched out into the world. It's fun. It's really fun.
Well, and also to your point, you know, about all the differences. I mean, vive la différence. You need different kinds of personalities, right. And you need people who might be more trained toward numbers and taxes. And, you know, you knew from the get-go that was not calling to you.
That was not me. No, that was not me. And I think for someone who certainly everyone who goes to Maine Law is smart. You know, there's a threshold test. Everyone's smart. For someone like me who has a big personality, is very social, likes to talk to people, isn't going to be happy sitting behind a desk for long periods of time, the thought of what to do with that as an attorney when I went into law school was pretty narrow. And I'm lucky that I didn't get caught up in that thinking before I started, because once I got in, I kind of found a path, and quite frankly, Bernstein helped me see a path to do work that I loved and still be very authentically me, which is, you know, I talk a lot, I'm very social, I'm not the person who's going to sort of read the detailed spreadsheet. I can if I have to, but it's not my highest and best use. And that's a great practice. That's been able to sort of get me far in this world. And so I'm lucky I found it. So I like to help students understand that you don't have to look and think a certain way to be successful as an attorney.
Yeah, and how great for Bernstein Shure to do that kind of assessment of you to help you get tracked.
That's right.
Going down the right track.
That's right.
I would think that doing what you're doing is the closest thing to running for office and being there in a seat there in Augusta, that you actually have that kind of that headiness of feeling like you're behind change and you're yes. helping to write legislation and you're pushing policy. And I would think that that piece of it would really be exciting.
Yes, that's absolutely right. Without the vote, we don't get to vote. But I can think of three particular situations where I felt sort of the policy societal shift happen, and that had a moment of real pride that we were part of those particular pieces of change, and that probably wasn't going to happen very often in my life, so that I should sort of pause for a minute and appreciate what was happening. And I can think the first one was the marriage equality, when we passed marriage equality and when John Baldacci signed that bill, sitting under the stairs waiting for that with three or four good friends, and having the realization come over us that, oh my gosh, we just did that. That's the first time in the country that that has ever happened. And that feeling, I think, I'll never forget that. I'll never forget that. It was one of the most impactful moments. I felt the same way this year about Governor Mills signing Death with Dignity. I had worked on that issue before I went to law school in 2000. I ran the Death with Dignity campaign, the referendum, and to come full circle in 2019 and see it actually enacted in law was humbling and profound, and I just felt very, very proud. There was a 19-year span in between those efforts, but there are some moments in life where you realize this is extraordinary, and I just need to pause here and just sort of mark it as extraordinary. And you know that you're changing people's lives in a very, very profound way.
And I imagine at that point, and congratulations, by the way.
Thank you.
Those are huge, I don't want to say gets, because that cheapens it, but wow, huge victories.
Yep.
And I would imagine also that so many people, lawyers included, find themselves soul-searching and saying, what am I supposed to be doing? And I would imagine that at that point in your life, you say, I am doing exactly
yes.
what I'm supposed to be doing.
Yeah. That's an interesting point, because I think, I'm sure this is true in other careers, not just the law, but, you know, we have a day-to-day existence that we do at work. And even if we like our work, I think there's sort of a natural human tendency to question and say, what is my larger purpose? Am I contributing something to the world? And let's be honest, I think most days, maybe not, because that's just the way the world works. So when you get those moments where it feels almost seismic, those shifts, that those are the moments I'll reflect back on my life and think, yes, I was doing exactly what I was supposed to be doing, along with, let me be clear, a whole bunch of other amazing people. And those changes can sustain you for a long time. You know, when you think back on them and reflect and say, okay, well, change in particular can be very slow and unwieldy. But once you start to experience it once or twice, you understand that everybody has a role in that process year over year. And that if you're lucky, you'll hit a few of those things in your lifetime, and it'll make it seem worthwhile, or make it that mark feels very impactful.
Are you lucky?
Very. Yeah, very. And in every conceivable way, very lucky.
Well, Kate, I want to thank you so much.
Thank you.
For joining us
fun.
Here for this, the SureCast. And I just wish you all the best. And
thank you.
In your endeavors here.
Thank you. It's Bernstein nice to talk Sure. about sort of what we do during the day and reflect on it a little bit, because I'm very lucky and enjoy what I do. So it's nice to share that a little bit.
You gave us a great view. Thank you for taking us to Augusta.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to The SureCast, a Bernstein Shore podcast. We hope you have enjoyed the program. To find out more information about the topics discussed in this episode and more, please visit www.bernsteinshore.com/media. Thank you.